Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for December 4th, 2022. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and we here at Wrestling Night in America talk the big shows in pro wrestling. So tonight we're going to preview two big shows that are coming up next weekend, both on Saturday. It's NXT Deadline, the premium live event that will be hosted on Peacock, as well as ROH's Final Battle, their final pay-per-view of 2022. And to help me preview these is PWTorch.com contributor Tyler Sage. Tyler, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Hey, Greg, good to be here as always, and excited to talk about these shows in particular. So, yeah, it's good to talk to you and good to talk to all the people that call in every week. I'm excited to be here as always.
Excellent. And we're excited to have you. If you want to be one of those people who call in and talk to us, as Tyler alluded to there, you can do so. 515-605-9345 if you are listening live. If you are listening to this on delay later in the week, we are here each and every weekend, mostly on Sundays at 8 p.m. Eastern, but there are weeks that we go on the air live after big shows. We will not be doing that, by the way, next weekend. We will be at our usual time, Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, next weekend. We will review Deadline and Final Battle on this show, but we'll be doing it on Sunday night. So there will be no post-shows immediately after either Deadline or Final Battle next Saturday night. The next time you can find us on is next Sunday. That will be the 11th of December at our usual 8 p.m. Eastern time. And, of course, if you are listening to this on delay on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, whenever you get around to it, you can always call in next week, or you can email us anytime, WNIALivecast@gmail.com. We love getting emails from listeners about the events that we are talking about. So even though we won't be going on the air next Saturday after Deadline or Final Battle, if you watch either of those shows, either in real time or later on Sunday, you can shoot us an email about your thoughts on the show. We'll integrate those emails into the shows next Sunday. So, Tyler, I want to start off talking about NXT Deadline. This is a unique show, to say the least, with a brand new type of match, the Iron Survivor Challenge, which was introduced a couple weeks ago by Shawn Michaels, who is becoming more and more of an on-air authority figure on NXT. So the rules are thus. Two wrestlers start the match every 5 minutes. Another wrestler enters until all five participants are present. After the last wrestler enters, there is a predetermined time limit. Each time a wrestler scores a pinfall, submission, or being the victim of a disqualification, they gain a point. A wrestler who is pinned, submitted, or is disqualified goes into a penalty box for 90 seconds. The winner of the match is the wrestler who scores the most points at the end of the time limit. I believe it's going to be 25 minutes, I think, for this match. The winners of the men's and women's matches, there will be one of each at Deadline, will be crowned number one contender for both the NXT Championship and then for the women, the NXT Women's Championship. So, Tyler, just taking a step back, not even looking at the card, not even looking at the participants of this match, we have not seen a lot of new match types introduced by WWE over the last several years. Here they try something with Iron Survivor Challenge. What's your initial reaction to the announcement of this particular match type and the rules therein?
Yeah, I mean, my initial reaction is a snarky one, I would say, but it's that this would never have happened in a Vince McMahon WWE/NXT world, because I think he's against any sort of, you know, what you just had to do there and, you know, the PowerPoint presentation we're going to get as a viewing audience for this match to come up. But that being said, I'm not against it. That's just my initial take, because my brain is so wired to think what Vince McMahon thinks is sports entertainment, and this is definitely a divergence from that. So, yeah, I mean, I like any new idea that is, you know, thrown out there and tried. I think NXT is a great vessel to try out some, you know, elaborate ideas, and I would put this in that category. You know, if you watch one or two of these in a night, there's probably a way to tighten it up a little bit, and we'll see after watching the show. But, yeah, I mean, that's what NXT is for, in my opinion, and just seeing new ideas and seeing, you know, just some creativity, I'm for that. And, you know, the stipulation I like for it, it kind of makes the show a little interesting from, you know, the most important things are getting that number one contender spot as opposed to actually, you know, the title matches, kind of like the Royal Rumble is for the main roster. So that's obviously proven to have worked in the past, and it is also obviously a correlation to the Survivor Series War Games situation with the main roster. So that was probably would be my biggest detraction from it, is that it feels a little samey with the main roster, and I think maybe doing this a little separate would be ideal in the future. But, you know, I'm pretty open-minded here. I think the participants are really good in both men's and women's matches here. And as someone who does not watch NXT on TV consistently, I more read reports, listen to people I trust that watch it, and I'm a, you know, I watch all the pay-per-views. This is intriguing to me as that type of viewer. So for whatever that's worth, I think that's a positive note in many directions for this this type of match.
Yeah, this is sort of an amalgamation of a number of different stipulation matches. You have a little bit of War Games in here. You have a little bit of the Scramble match that they did, more than a decade ago, that they had one pay-per-view with it, and then they didn't do any other matches. A little bit of the, you know, one of the TNA stipulation matches involving the penalty box if you get pinned. So, I think that, and you're right, I do believe that NXT is the place to try things out. It does seem complicated if you're kind of following along with it on TV. I mean, we all thought, I think, that War Games was relatively simplistic in the grand scheme of things, but for those who called in last weekend after Survivor Series, I think there was people who had not seen a War Games either in WCW or in NXT and were kind of confused about what was going on. And I guess my concern is, this could work out, and it could, when it's all laid out and you're watching it unfold before your eyes, it could make a lot of sense, but there's also the concern that it's a little overcomplicated. But you're, again, going back to the point you made about NXT kind of being the fertile ground to try these, you know, stipulation matches out, and if it were great, they can be either a staple of NXT or they can be taken, as War Games was, and utilized on the main roster successfully. So, you know, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And big whoop, you know, we've seen a lot of things in NXT over the years not work. So, you know, just throw this in the pile with the rest of them, I suppose. But at least it's different. At least it's a draw. As you said, you know, as a not someone who regularly views NXT, this might be the hook for you to actually check this out. And there could be other viewers who are in the same boat as you. As far as the actual rules, the one that stands out to me is, like, the one that I have trouble with is, okay, so a wrestler is going to get a point every time they score a fall, basically, yet two wrestlers are going to be in the match way longer than everybody else. And that seems to be a pretty severe disadvantage, although you will, unless the falls don't start until everyone is in the match, which is not what the rules say, but I guess they could tweak it and say that. But, you know, you have the two wrestlers start every 5 minutes, another wrestler enters. So, you know, let's say you start with Hayes and J.D. McDonough. 5 minutes later at the 5 minute mark, Grayson Waller. 10 minute mark, Joe Gacy. 15 minute wild card winner. So, I mean, if you're the last guy coming in, there are two wrestlers who had been in there for 15 minutes. And had the opportunity to score 15 minutes worth of falls before you even got in the match. So that seems to be pretty starkly unfair, unless they come up with a fair system of figuring out the order, and it's not just random. But to me, that stands out as the most obvious flaw in this system as it's laid out right now. Do you kind of feel the same way, or is there any other part of this that you would like to see WWE maybe try to tweak before we get to Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the main thing, that if there's a second version of these matches, that would be the thing to be tweaked, because, you know, they very well could have a story for each of these matches where, you know, the just like the heels get the advantage more often than not in a War Games type environment, you can have the heel tell a story where the heel gets the advantage that you're talking about there, and you know, the babyface comes in the last spot and climbs back down, you know, before they even get in there, they're down two falls and they climb their way back and went in that way. And that might work for both these matches, but if you're going to do this long term, yeah, that doesn't work to do it every time, because every match is going to feel exactly the same. And so, yeah, I think that would be the main thing. Or just start all five wrestlers at the same time, have it 25 minutes, and you do the same rules it's probably the most likely scenario going forward. But, you know, we'll see. I'm trying to think. I'm looking through the rules here as well. And, you know, another thing that could be, you know, the disqualification thing. I don't love gaining a point when someone does a disqualifying thing against you. That could be utilized negatively for storyline, I think, a lot in the future. But, you know, besides that, I think it's all pretty much straightforward. And, yeah, like you said with the callers that called in on Saturday after War Games, I think there's going to be a lot of that, of confusion, even though the PowerPoint's going to be there for everybody. I think Vic Joseph and Booker T, I don't know if that's the greatest announced team to kind of lift the audience through and get the rules in all the way, especially for the first match. One would presume, I guess I don't really know unless they've stated it, but whatever the first match to go here is going to be a lot of heavy lifting to get the audience acquainted with this type of match, and I think that could be one of the bigger downfalls of this is not pinpoint exact announcing, or if someone like Vic Joseph just has to spend the whole time explaining the rules constantly, I think that could really hurt the match. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely pitfalls everywhere, and I think they'll tweak it. If this is anywhere near successful, I think there's a way to make this pretty tight and make it on the main roster and a regular staple as well.
The other thing I wanted to bring up again before we actually get to mm-hmm. the matches is how they went about deciding who was going to be in this match. I know you said you're not a regular viewer of NXT, so I'm not sure if you saw NXT mm-hmm. this past week where Shawn Michaels held a Hall of Fame roundtable with Alundra Blaze, a.k.a. Medusa, Molly Holly, X-Pac, and Road Dogg, where they had an open discussion amongst themselves about who should be involved in these matches. One of the first things that Shawn Michaels said when he was sort of setting the ground rules for what they were talking about was not necessarily to focus on the win-loss records. And of course, alarm bells are going off in my head because why would you want to discount strip away everything when you're selecting people to participate in a groundbreaking match? First of all, why would you want to discard win-loss records? And then add in the fact that these matches are for the number one contendership to the main titles. So if there was ever a match where you would want to do the opposite and in fact take wins and losses into great account, this would be the match to do it. And so that I had trouble with that right off the bat. But, you know, it was a discussion, and I thought it was really interesting the way they did it. It wasn't just, you know, everybody was great and everybody should be involved. They pointed out some of the flaws in some of the wrestlers. So, you know, if you had a chance to see that, or, you know, I know you said you read a lot of reports for people and hear discussions about it, your reaction to how they presented the way that they were going to come up with the wrestlers in these matches.
Yeah, I did not watch that. I'll be upfront with you here, Greg, and everyone in the audience. So take everything I say with a grain of salt here. But yeah, reading reports and hearing people talk about it, I think you are probably on the more kind side of some of the thought process I had consumed from that. And, you know, just you laying it out there. Yeah, it's not the most ideal way. It's kind of like the antithesis of, I guess, not even current day AEW, but kind of that, like, hey, we're not AEW for sure, in that sort of mindset with that verbiage verbatim. So, yeah, it's not super ideal. I don't know if you want to do that. I think they're having this as an example is a good reason why I think for a long time, especially in WWE and AEW and TNA, everywhere, Impact, you just kind of get like, hey, these are the people that are in this tournament, and there's not a peek behind the curtain, you know, in kayfabe terms of why these people are here. And I think that serves pro wrestling better in general than, you know, throwing out the win-loss record, talking about potential and earning it and all that sort of stuff. It feels more like the college football playoff selection committee than a pro wrestling way to set up matches. So I would say in general, I'm down on it. But again, I didn't watch it as of yet. I'm sure I will get, if it was good, I'm sure they will video recap it a lot here on this pay-per-view. But if they don't, then I think that's also a sign that it didn't go over too hot after making TV time.
I think there are a lot of people who would be very interested in a behind-the-scenes look of the discussions that take place to set the college football playoffs. So and I'm sure there would be an equal amount of people complaining about what they talked about, just like there was here. So take that for what it's worth. But as for the actual matches, there's only three matches announced so far for NXT Deadline. We have Tuesday night's NXT as the go-home show. They'll probably announce more matches on there, although these Iron Survivor Challenge matches will take up a fair amount of time, as will the NXT title match. The first Iron Survivor Challenge is the men's match that we'll talk about today. Carmelo Hayes, JD McDonagh, Grayson Waller, Joe Gacy, and the wild card winner. So there will be a wild card match for the men's and women's on Tuesday night, where the winner of the triple threat match will be a part of the Iron Survivor Challenge match at NXT Deadline. For the men, Von Wagner, Axiom, and Andre Chase will be the participants in that wild card match. So, you know, say throughout win-loss record, I still think you have a pretty decent list here. Carmelo Hayes, obviously a guy who has been a top-tier performer in NXT. JD McDonagh has been pushed as a top guy but hasn't won a lot of big matches, so maybe they threw out the win-loss record for JD McDonagh to include him here. Grayson Waller got a high ceiling. I'm not a huge fan of him, but I totally get why people would be high on him. Joe Gacy, and with the Dyad, obviously that's a highly pushed group. And then, you know, my pick would kind of be Von Wagner in terms of who I think would come out of that wild card match. I would prefer to see Axiom personally, but Wagner would probably be the choice there, especially based on the renewed push he seems to be getting. So what's your take on the participants of this match, and what kind of match we can maybe expect from these guys?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're going to take the non-contenders, you know, Bron Breakker and Apollo Crews are obviously in the NXT title match, then, you know, this feels like a proper way that WWE will structure a multi-person match for a contendership. You know, you have your, you know, Carmelo Hayes, who is obviously, you know, has been, I don't know how long has it been, 2 years now, where people have been waiting for him to go to the main roster and be a big star, feels a lot more like the, you know, the black and gold NXT, where you kind of have the anointed person who's going to win the title and then go up to the main roster, and you think they're going to be a big star. He feels like he's more in that boat than kind of what modern NXT, you know, whatever, 2.0 or 2.5, whatever we're on right now. But and the rest, you know, you got McDonagh, who's going to be your, you know, your high spot guy. You have Waller, you have Gacy, who are doing more character work. And then, yeah, I think Von Wagner as well is going to come out of that group. But, you know, if Axiom does, you know, you got his high-flying ability in there as well to break up the match. And, you know, it's not a ladder match per se, so you don't necessarily need a ton of that. But I think it should be a really good match. I mean, for everyone in there is good at something, right? I mean, Carmelo and JD and I think Vaughn are you know, going to give you good wrestling stuff. And then Waller and Gacy, you know, not my super personal cup of tea out of that group, but they can all do their own things in there as well. And I think there's this type of match you need that level of good work rate, high flying, and some character WWE sports entertainment work with the DQs counting as points, the penalty box. You know, does someone stay in the penalty box for the 90 seconds? If they get out, does that mean anything? All that sort of stuff. That I think WWE does well more often than not. There's a good cast of characters here to make that happen. So, yeah, I think it should be an entertaining match. I would go with Carmelo Hayes to, you know, get that spot, and him and Bron Breakker. You know, I'm not trying to give away all my picks here tonight, but, you know, that setting up that as a big-time match in NXT, I think, is something that would behoove in NXT going forward.
I think people thought that Carmelo Hayes would be main roster bound after his last after losing the North American Championship, and you know, here he still is. So it's kind of like Cameron Grimes, where people have been predicting him to go to the main roster for feels like 2 years now. My only thing about this match is you have a lot of heels here: Hayes, McDonagh, Waller, Gacy, all heels. You had Wagner, and he's a heel too. Now, what that can do is really make it a wide open race. Because Bron Breakker, babyface, probably going to beat Apollo Crews in the main event to retain the title. So you can't go process of elimination and say, well, we can eliminate all the baby faces because Breaker's going to face a heel for the title because everybody's a heel. So, like, everybody then has an opportunity to win. But I think that's another reason to go Axiom here. The masked guy, the guy who is a little bit undersized, he can play the underdog role well. I wouldn't expect him to win if he gets in there, but it does add a baby face element to that match that I think you probably need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's good as well. I mean, I think for poor Andre Chase, I don't think either of us think he's going to go through. So, yeah, but that does it here too. And, yeah, I mean, I think that works as well. And we'll see. I mean, this type of match, I mean, we've never seen it too. So it's hard to project totally what works and what doesn't. Like, does this match kind of negate babyface and heel status? You know, if there's four heels and one face in there, maybe it could. Or do they all team up on Hayes and 5 months themselves, and that's the Hayes comeback stories he overcomes for heels as well. I think, you know, kind of sky's the limit, and with this type of match, you can do anything you want to creatively because there's really – it's a sandbox of telling any story. So I think you're right that Axiom there kind of evens it out more so. But, you know, I think anything's possible.
The Women's Iron Survivor Challenge match will feature Zoe Stark, Cora Jade, Roxanne Perez, Kiana James, and the wild card winner, which will be either Wendy Chu, Fallon Henley, or Indy Hartwell. So I think this is – it sounds strange, but I almost think this is a deeper field than the men. Zoe Stark, after her heel turn, has really turned it up. She's wrestled some – I think she wrestled on Main Event as well, so she's gotten some main roster looks. Cora Jade and Roxanne Perez, they're going to fight forever. They're going to be this generation's Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens or Marty Jannetty and Shawn Michaels that whenever they're around each other, they're just going to fight. You know, there seems to be a big drop-off there to Kiana James. I know she's been featured a lot, but it's not been in a really – you know, high-level pushed position in terms of being a title challenger. So she stands out here. And then, you know, you don't have any of the you don't have Nikita Lyons, who's selling an injury. Mm-hmm. You don't have, you know, Gigi Dolin and JC Jane, who are a part of Toxic Attraction. So there's a lot of big-name women who are not in this match for various reasons, but it still seems like a deep field, and I'm almost more interested in the women's match. I probably am more interested in the women's match than the men's match with these names. You know, the newly turned heel Stark, who's a really good wrestler, Cora Jade and Roxanne Perez, who still have their issues, and, you know, seeing how Kiana James fits in there, seeing how, you know, I don't know, I would expect Indy Hartwell, perhaps, unless it's Fallon Henley. You know, they might want to do Fallon Henley, Kiana James, and further that storyline and involve Henley in the match too. So your take on the Women's Iron Survivor Challenge and the participants therein?
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you. I think there's just better talent in general from a personal interest standpoint and just more story into this match between Cora and Roxanne, and then if Henley does get in there with Kiara James, and, you know, like you just brought the facts about Zoe Stark there. But, yeah, I think that also makes it a little more kind of like what you were talking about the men's match earlier is what do you do there, right? Is it Jade and Perez cancel each other out and James and Henley cancel each other out and Stark takes advantage, but then you have a, you know, Stark versus Mandy Rose doesn't make a ton of sense. You know, so is this time for, you know, Roxanne to win this match as the babyface and get her revenge against Mandy and Toxic Attraction? You know, that's where I would probably go. But, you know, it depends what you want to do. Do you want to have your two biggest matches, which I think I just laid out with Hayes and Breaker and Perez and Mandy Rose, then is that what you want to do and set up here? I think that's totally fine. But and then obviously you brought up, I would say Indy Hartwell as well would be the wild card. We'll have to wait and see because I do kind of like the thing you laid out there, Greg, of, you know, the four women having their issues within the match and then Stark being a heel taking advantage. But, yeah, so I think there's a lot more intrigue and there's possibility for just good, you know, better work rate, honestly, in this match and more stories coming out of this than the men's match. It feels like, you know, there's always when you have the women's rumble and the men's rumble, it feels like one of the two has more stories, has more going for it, and the other one is lacking. And I feel like the women's one, this pay-per-view is almost made for this match, and the men's was not cobbled together, but it feels like, hey, we're doing this, let's get the guys involved as well. So That's why I'm curious what goes first, because you'd think they open and close the show with both of these, and I would, you know, bet on the women's. I would personally choose the women's to go last. I think you would too, by the way you were talking earlier. But I'm also just a huge Roxanne Perez fan. I think of anyone in NXT, for me personally, I want to see her win and be the champion, and I think that would help me personally watch a little bit more NXT than I do currently.
Yeah, Zoe Stark and Roxanne Perez are perhaps the two most interesting here. Perez got a cup of coffee on the main roster as well, and she shined there. Zoe, her arrow is pointing up more than any of the others, but, you know, you made the point of it being heel on heel. How do you do that? You know, especially since Zoe is newly turned, and you don't really want to muddy the waters and have people cheer her over Mandy Rose when she just turned heel. And then you have Roxanne Perez, who is this plucky upstart. I don't even want to say underdog, because she's pretty heavily pushed and she's won her share of matches, but naturally she would be the underdog in a match like this. She'd be the underdog in a match against Mandy Rose and would be a strong babyface to oppose Mandy Rose. So I think there's a couple different real contenders here in this match that, you know, I would go – I think there's pluses and minuses going with Stark, and there's pluses – I don't know if there's so many minuses going with Roxanne Perez, unless you just don't want to pull the trigger on her already and you want to hold on to that. And maybe, you know, maybe WrestleMania season, when you do that show, maybe that's when you want to have Roxanne Perez get crowned as champion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the only thing of, like, you know, when I laid out both mine, it's like the obvious way they're going within the booking structure is Hayes and Perez being champions. In the intermediate or near future, and you want to set up both matches to put them both in on a collision course to be in that zone. I don't think you do. I think you want to space that out to, you know, keep the intrigue and get your hot baby faces wins at different times. So I think, you know, there'll be an upset one of the two, at least in the way I'm picking it. But, you know, it's funny, too, we're talking about ROH later, but Roxanne Perez, a.k.a. Roxy, back then was the last Ring of Honor women's champion before they folded. So I think apropos that we're talking about her tonight as well as
Yeah, let's do the last match of NXT Deadline before we go to the phones. Bron Breakker versus Apollo Crews NXT championship match. You know, we talk about which match goes on last. I know Triple H is pretty traditional. I think Shawn Michaels is kind of the same way. So I think this match probably goes on last, although I don't know how you split up the Iron Survivor matches. It depends on how many other matches there are on the card that are yet to be announced. But Breakker versus Cruz, I mean, who knows? Maybe it starts the show. I don't know. But, you know, this seems like a good match for Breakker. He's going to have a good match against Apollo Crews. Crews is a guy who's got main roster bona fides coming down to NXT. He shined in NXT before he went to the main roster. And it's going to be a good stepping stone for Bron Breakker, and I think that's what you look for at this stage of his development is who can you put Bron Breakker in the ring with who not only is going to make Breakker look good, but who he's going to earn something in the fans' eyes by beating, and I think Apollo Crews checks a lot of those boxes.
Yeah, I agree as well. I think it's a good, you know, like when Tyler Breeze, I mean, what was that, 2 years ago? Was it maybe before the pandemic when he came down from the main roster and was in title contention and helped elevate people there. I think that's just a good strategy overall. You know, Mandy Rose has been champion for seems like forever at this point, and that's the same sort of ideal where someone is kind of less than on the main roster. You come down and you feel like a bigger deal. And, you know, in this spot, it's perfect for him to lose here to Bron Breakker, give him, like you said, the bona fides there to continue his title run. And, you know, he can do it against someone on the main roster. He can use that in the future as well. And, obviously, Apollo Crews, fantastic worker, can, you know, make Bron Breakker look like $1 million, which is what you want here. I think also it has the potential how you structure the show. This does not need to be a, you know, 22-minute clinic. I think you could do this in 10 or 12 minutes, depending on how much time you have to cover the show. Obviously, their time's unlimited on Peacock. But, you know, if this does go on last and you're long on the other two, I think you could structure this in a way where you could shave 3 minutes off and tell the same story, which is, I think, a benefit more than a negative in a show structured like this, but should be good. I mean, I've seeing Bron in this way, I think is interesting. And, you know, he's stepped up in my mind to the challenge of people who are tremendous performers in the way that Apollo Crews is, and I think he can do that as well here. But, yeah, it's a good challenge for him. That's what I'm looking out for, because I think the result here is pretty obvious, but how Braun does in this match is what I'm looking for, how he responds to it.
I did like the interaction they had on TV this past week where Breaker met Crews at the diner where he writes all of his secret thoughts, and they had a little back and forth there. I thought that was really well done, and both played their parts very well. And I know you said that not really a high chance that Breaker loses the title here, but truly, I mean, what do you think about that? Can you make any argument for Crews winning, or do you see any way he comes out of here as the champion?
I mean, it depends. I mean, I guess the meta reason for that would be that Braun would be going up to the main roster. I don't think if you're going to do that, I think they would have done that early on his run, more of a Vince guy, right, when he was looking for that sort of body type to come up. But, you know, it feels like he's more of a post-WrestleMania from a inject something new on the show when people that are casually viewing it kind of drop off and you kind of give a thank you to the fans who are watching both, you know, Raw, NXT, and SmackDown weekly. So that feels like the trajectory. So him losing here doesn't make a ton of sense. I guess you could have him drop it, get it back, and then drop it again, which is not super ideal. But again, with Crews, obviously it changes the dynamic of who's, you know, if he were to win, that would tell me something about the men's Iron Survivor Challenge match earlier. So that's why if you don't have this and you had Crews win, I think that would really be a big signal to that match if that's on last. So, again, all that to say, I don't think so, but it's not a 100% certainty. I think that it would probably be kind of cute booking in general to do it, but unless they've got bigger plans for Breaker on the main roster, then, yeah, it makes sense. I think Apollo Crews could certainly be the NXT champion and go on a run and have great matches. I don't think it's anything against him. I just think the trajectory of the show, it would feel a little off to me from where they've been.
Yeah. All right. Again, NXT Deadline is Saturday. We'll talk about that and the results of it, the fallout from it next Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, here on PWTorchDailyCast.com, Wrestling Night in America. Let's go to the phones. We only have one caller on hold, so if you are listening live, you want to jump in, 515-605-9345 is the number to call. We have Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland, who's going to lead us off. Ryan, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. What's the first of your three-pack of questions for us tonight?
First question is on the Survivor Challenge in NXT. Is there a reason why it's so focused mainly on heels and not hardly any baby faces are in these matches yet?
Yeah, so we didn't really look at the women's match in terms of that. So we start Cora Jade, both heels, Roxanne Perez, babyface, Kiana James, heel. So really, you've got one babyface. I think Carmelo Hayes is kind of a little bit of a tweener, but you've got one babyface amongst the two matches. Now, you could end up with three with Axiom if he were to join the or Andre Chase. I mean, he's a babyface now too, I believe. Or if you put Wendy Chu or Fallon Henley. Indy Hartwell's kind of a tweener. I think she's kind of turned heel a little bit. Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, you could sort of understand in the men's match why that's the case, because the babyface is the champion. And even if Apollo Crews wins, you still got a babyface champion, so you'd want a heel challenger. But I think it's a little harder to explain away using that reasoning in the women's match, Tyler. Is it just that there's a deeper crop of heels to choose from on the women's side of NXT? Is that the simple answer for it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's just, you know, same sort of thing. Is like, it feels, you know, not to take the talk in the smoke filled room that you're talking about with the legends and Shawn Michaels earlier, but it feels to me the way it's booked is people that thought we're going to be able to put on a good match altogether, and the face heel dynamic is not as important for the structure, the way the match was structured. I think the winners have been chosen far in advance in both these matches, and there's been people that are good workers and would work well storytelling wise to branch off of this. And, you know, I'm usually not critical of that, but we'll have to see it work out, but it makes it feel a little slightly more contrived than usual by having all the faces and heels. But I think it's just people that are going to work well together, and that's how it was chosen. I don't think there's some, you know, and we'll see if this is the first time we've had these matches, maybe having, you know, more heels than faces leads to some storytelling elements that are going to make sense once we see it. But right now it feels more like just good workers were thrown in there more so than, you know, two faces, three heels, or three faces, two heels sort of dynamic.
All right, Ryan, back to you for your second question for us.
My second question is on the report that there's a pie-in-the-sky chance of The Rock winning the Royal Rumble next year. Who would you have him eliminate? Like, would you have it be Shawn Michaels, or do you think he'd come off as a heel since that's San Antonio? The reason I say that is, don't you want to not try to use, like, your younger talent getting trained over the top rope and possibly have, like, a legend get over the top rope since it won't hurt them as much as far as credibility-wise, seeing that the drilled man threw someone out?
If we're talking The Rock, I don't think it matters. I don't even care. If I get The Rock, when I'm WWE, he can throw out anyone. It doesn't matter because he's The Rock. And he's going to bring so many more eyeballs to WrestleMania and to the Royal Rumble in late buys or however they want to do on pay-per-view. So I almost don't think it matters who he throws out. Tyler, do you have a situation? I know we've talked for the last 2 years about The Rock appearing at WrestleMania. It seems a little more serious this year than it has been in the past. There's now talk that to get to WrestleMania, you have him win the Royal Rumble. I don't even think you need to do that. Like, the story with Roman Reigns and their familial ties is not a secret. It's very well known. So I wouldn't even bother having him win the Rumble. And why would you, if you're WWE, if you're The Rock, why would you put your golden goose in a situation where he could get injured? You know, why even put him in another match before WrestleMania and risk that if you're The Rock or WWE? So him being in the Rumble and winning doesn't even make a lot of sense to me, but for the sake of this question, do you understand, do you buy the argument Ryan is making that you don't want The Rock to throw out someone and potentially hurt them by doing that, or do you think it's The Rock, he could throw out anyone he wants?
Yeah, I think in WWE 2020, or, you know, January 2023, I don't think there's anyone that he could throw out that would get heat in the same level when, you know, Roman won the Rumble in Philadelphia and him and The Rock are in the middle of the ring getting booed, right? I don't think we're going to get that level of heat for anything that The Rock does. You know, the only person I could think of is if it was him and Sammy, or him and a returning Cody, that might be the two things I would avoid if I were WWE, but even that I don't think would be a huge problem. You know, if you're going to do it, I would say have him throw out Jimmy or Jay, or if it's, you know, him, Jimmy, and Jay, and he throws them both out, that can lead to obviously good storytelling between The Rock and Roman and the Bloodline and all that stuff. So, but yeah, I'm more aligned with you, Greg, on not even having him in that match. And yes, that leads to the question of, okay, well, what does the Royal Rumble even mean at this point? I think it would be not even in the top 50 sins from a booking standpoint that WWE has ever done, where they've had, you know, people win Money in the Bank, cash in on the U.S. title, right? I mean, that just happened, and it feels, you know, like theory's in a better place for that decision. And when it happened, it felt like the dumbest decision that WWE's ever done, and it killed Money in the Bank, and I don't think it did, you know, when you zoom out 3 weeks later. So having The Rock, you know, there's so many weeks of television in between the Rumble and WrestleMania that you could tell that story. You could also have Roman defend it each belt differently, or you could have defend the belt and then just face The Rock for without the belt on the line. Like, there's so many things you could do that I think that team has shown the creativity to get through some sort of hard to get through booking decisions on the surface. I think that's a good thing about pro wrestling, is that you can do anything you want, and if it's good, you get a pass for it. And I think whatever they do with The Rock has the potential to be pretty good and not have people, you know, think about, okay, well, why do we even have a Royal Rumble at this point? So that's my long answer to that question.
That is the only fly in the ointment, right? That in years past, you could say, okay, Rock is going to face Roman Reigns. We don't need him to win the Rumble, but they'll face off for the title, and then the Rumble winner will face the other champion, because he used to have two champions back in the day. And now you have Roman Reigns, who's the undisputed champion, so you can't really get away with that. So that would be the only reason. I'm not sure if I agree, Tyler, that it would be as easy as you're kind of making it out to be to come up with a reason to have the Rumble winner not main event WrestleMania, quote-unquote main event WrestleMania, against the champion. But there are ways to do it, and I think that would be the only reason why you would want to have The Rock win the Rumble, is so that the Rumble still holds some sort of meaning, unless somewhere between now and WrestleMania, Reigns loses one of the titles, which I don't see happening. But, yeah, there's a lot of different ways that could go. Ryan, back to you for your third question for us.
Final question is a question about a house show I recently attended, WWE. I noticed there was a fan I could see was the odd man out. His buddies got free VIP passes. I guess they're worth like $500 to get backstage. I guess because his buddies knew the people who set up the equipment for the live event. So is that common that WWE gives away those passes? I know that they give away a lot of like the regular tickets, but I didn't realize they gave away that many VIP passes, because I thought those were like their golden goose of the house show.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't been to enough house shows to know how that works. I mean, it could be, Tyler, just another incentive for fans to go to house shows. They're not a ton of incentives for fans to go to house shows at this point, I don't think. So, you know, getting the opportunity to go backstage and see, meet a wrestler and not have to pay an arm and a leg for it would be, I think, a pretty decent incentive to put out there as a reason to do that.
Yeah, and I'm not well-versed on this either, so I'm speculating on it. But, yeah, I mean, it makes sense if you had a couple that you, you know, if there's like a, you know, obviously kids in the crowd, and there's, you know, the house shows are bare bones in the back, right? It's not a TV production. So if you had a couple wrestlers who, you know, are there to say hi to some people as part of the gig, I mean, if I was a performer and there are people coming backstage looking to meet a wrestler, I think that's a pretty good spot to be, pretty fun interaction as a performer and for the fans. So yeah, if they did a couple of those for each house show, yeah, it makes sense. On, you know, you tell your friends you got to go backstage without paying an arm and a leg, I think that would maybe entice them through word of mouth to go to the next house show. So that might be the strategy here, but you know, either way, I think it sounds pretty cool. I'm glad they're doing it.
All right, Ryan, thanks for the call. Talk to you soon.
Well, that was actually, it was actually 40-year-old men, and basically the reason was they knew the people, you know, work for WWE somehow.
Oh, well, I mean, there's your answer then. I don't, it's probably not a lot more complicated than that. If they, you know, those are probably different backstage passes than the ones they would give out to, you know, fans, for example. So, that might be the reasoning for that. Tyler, let's get into Final Battle before we go to our next phone call. We've got Reverend Keith up next, but we'll talk about a few matches here with Final Battle first. And we'll talk about a match that was just made recently, thanks to what happened on Rampage, actually, on Friday. Swerve Strickland and Keith Lee, Swerve in Our Glory, take on Shane Taylor and J.D. Griffey. So Shane Taylor and Keith Lee, once upon a time, were a tag team in ROH, and then Keith Lee went off to WWE. So Shane Taylor on Rampage confronts him about it, says J.D. Griffey's going to be his partner, asks Keith Lee to get a partner, and Swerve shows up. And apparently that was all that was needed to make this an official tag team match. So my first question to you about this match, Tyler, I know that you're an ROH guy here for PWTorch.com. Shane Taylor, I'm intrigued by his return. I'm intrigued by him opposing his one-time partner, Keith Lee. I don't know a lot about J.D. Griffey, and there may be some listeners who don't know a lot about him either. So can you fill us in on the history between Shane Taylor and Keith Lee, and also where J.D. Griffey fits in there?
Yeah, I'm also not a J.D. Griffey. I mean, he was with them near the end. I mean, when Shane Taylor Promotions was, and I'm sure Reverend Keith, he might be able to enlighten us too when he gets on here. So I will kind of defer to him because I know he's a big fan and in that same part of the country as well. But, you know, Shane Taylor Promotions expanded beyond Moses Khan and Shane Taylor near the end, and Griffey was there, but never had any sort of consequential matches in that spot. But yeah, I mean, more, you laid out pretty well Shane Taylor and Keith Lee in the pre-Keith Lee and NXT days were, you know, I don't want to say a dominant tag team, but from a size standpoint and a strength and personality standpoint, one of the best things going in Ring of Honor at that time, and have felt, you know, like wayward sons coming back together here. And I think it's an interesting story to tell, obviously, with the what we thought was the breakup of Strickland and Keith Lee, and then, you know, you see them going off camera to talk, and then you have this interaction on Rampage. I mean, it feels like if you're going to do Shane Taylor and Keith Lee, that would, if they were to have this match, and it feels like they're going to determine what Keith Lee's character is at this point. Is he going to be a heel with Swerve, or is he going to be aligned with Shane Taylor in a face role and probably be more Ring of Honor focused for the foreseeable future? And I don't have a good guess on it at the moment, but I think either is intriguing for Keith Lee being the centerpiece of whatever the decision is. But, you know, from a personal standpoint, huge Shane Taylor fan. He's about the nicest guy in the entire world, and excited to see him here within the ROH AEW version of the company. And I was worried that we'd never see him in the spot, and it's just good to see him in there. So I think this has the potential to be, you know, besides another match, I think this is a top two most anticipated match for me personally. So if people are sleeping on it, I would wake up and be excited for this match.
I guess I'm a little confused as to why Keith Lee is choosing to team with Strickland again here. I mean, Obviously they had not been getting along very well for some time, and then it all came to a head at Full Gear when Keith Lee walked out on his partner and slapped him. So why doesn't Keith – I mean, the AEW locker room is not wanting for baby faces. You know, it's a big locker room. Like, there are a lot of people he could choose to face Shane Taylor here, or to help him face Shane Taylor. Are you satisfied with how AEW has gone this way with Keith and Swerve reuniting here after their big moment at Full Gear?
So on the micro question there, no. And on the macro, I'm also not happy with the way AEW has essentially not seemed to have cared about people being faces or heels in their promos going up to the match, and then the way they work it, you know, MJF, Britt Baker, you know, are key examples of that. And I think this is another example of having a story in mind and it being clunky to the conclusion and not really caring about it from a Tony Khan and a AEW creative perspective. I think it's just another long list of what is going on. And it felt like this match was, I don't know. I'm not sure the end goal here, but yeah, like what you're saying, Keith Lee at Full Gear to me was the baby face, and him and Swerve were going to break apart and they were going to have a singles match against each other or a series of single matches to, you know, determine that they are both face and heel. That didn't happen. And we get this kind of impromptu match, which I don't think helps the match at all. When, if you're a casual viewer and if you decide to buy this pay-per-view, you're going to be very confused why they're teaming together, because you better watch Rampage to even know that, let alone the arc there. So yeah, I mean, hopefully I'm not rambling too much, but I think it hurts a lot of AEW currently that characters are kind of ebbing back and forth in their allegiances for no apparent reason, and there doesn't seem to be a ton of care put in place that matters. And I think it does matter and always will matter in pro wrestling. And it makes it feel like, you know, you're booking a video game where you want to have an awesome match. But, you know, that's why I laid out what I hope happens here. I hope Keith Lee decides what he's going to do as a character here. I'm down on how we've got here with Keith Lee and with lots of heels and lots of baby faces recently within AEW.
And for me, it's not even the same as what we've seen out of Britt Baker and MJF with Keith Lee and Swerve. To me, it's been very clearly Swerve is the heel, Keith Lee is the babyface. And I actually give Tony Khan credit for giving a different spin to the partners who can't get along trope that we see so often in WWE. I mean, usually it's two heels or two baby faces, but here's a baby face and a heel, and, you know, they're willingly teaming, they're champions, but they don't get along. And then it seemed like Keith Lee turned baby face. And then, you know, that's where I have the problem of now we're going back to Keith Lee and Swerve, which feels like a step backward for Keith Lee in a way. And it's not doing him any favors. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if, you know, if you're looking at this from a Swerve Keith Lee point of view, like, what are you looking to get out of this if you're a Keith Lee fan? Keith Lee turns on Swerve again? And then, like, how can you be sure that's going to lead to anything? Because the last time he did, it didn't. So, I don't know. It's just they're in a weird place right now. Maybe things will get straightened out this week on TV, and we get a clearer picture of where they stand with each other. Next matchup is the ROH Television Championship, Samoa Joe, the King of Television, against Juice Robinson from New Japan. So Juice sending in a promo and getting this started. So this is going to be a really interesting match to me. Juice does have some, I believe, some history in ROH. So, you know, there's something there with that. And then Samoa Joe and Juice Robinson, I think it's just going to be a fun match. And it involves, you know, there's some intrigue in using Juice Robinson, using a New Japan guy here for this match. He's been in AEW before, so it's not, you know, something completely different. But this is one of those matches that does feel thrown together at the last minute. It doesn't feel like there's much of a story behind it, but you look forward to it just because you know it's going to be a good match. And we see a lot of that with AEW, and to a lesser extent, they're billed for ROHs. So it shouldn't be too much of a surprise. But, yeah, it's this is going to be an interesting one, just for the, you know, the match quality, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the match itself should be good. You know, how we get here, same sort of relative thumbs down by me, because it feels like an acknowledgement of, hey, this is a niche product within, and a niche product, basically, is how this is viewed from a corporate structure. And the people that are going to buy this pay-per-view know who Juice Robinson is. They know that it's going to be a good match. So, you know, that's fine. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's when you have Samoa Joe getting this title, or, you know, winning the TNT title off Wardlow, and then he's literally in a pay-per-view for the same company, and Wardlow is not instantly going for his other, you know, his ROH TV title, which seems like the most obvious explanation for a match here. And, you know, they could be telling a longer story here, but it just feels like an odd character choice by Wardlow, you know, within the AEW ROH structure, to not be challenging Samoa Joe after he just beat you in a triple threat match. So odd there. But
I think it's a fine line that Tony Khan has to walk, Tyler, of not wanting to present too much on an ROH pay-per-view that feels like AEW. And if you did Wardlow versus Samoa Joe, I mean, that would feel a lot like an AEW match. And I think he wants to give the ROH shows a different feel, which is why you bring in a Juice Robinson that you might not bring in for an AEW pay-per-view or an major AEW show. But I think that's also the problem with booking ROH within the world of AEW, is you have guys like Samoa Joe, and they're interacting with other AEW wrestlers because they're on AEW television, and then you have to pull them for an ROH show, and you've got to kind of manufacture an opponent because you don't want to use his AEW feud because it's not an AEW show. So it just feels overly complicated to me.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's, you know, we've all talked about that a lot. And, you know, I'm not opposed to this match. It's just, I don't think Samoa Joe personally, I don't think he needed to win the TNT title a couple weeks ago. I think he could have held off on that if, you know, this was coming up. And it just shows, you know, obviously there's a hierarchy of the AEW stuff is more important. Obviously those pay-per-views are more important, but it just, I don't know, it seems, I would have held off and not have made it confusing. You know, it's hard enough being a champion in both companies, you know, FTR, they weren't AEW champions, it was everything else. But, you know, Joe is now crossing both lines, a unforced error by Tony Khan to have somebody carry the secondary title for both brands is a confusing choice. And I think that, you know, but at the top, like I said, I think this match would be really, really good. Juice and Finley, David Finley, were in Ring of Honor for a period of time. I forget what their group name was called, but they were fun. And you know, just like I've seen Juice in New Japan, you know, against a Great O'Conn, against a Bad Luck Fale, et cetera, he can work with bigger guys until that match. So I think the match itself would be great, and it's low stakes. Joe can win and look powerful, and that's what you want, and have a good match. So, yeah, the match itself, totally, you know, when I'm watching it live next week, I'll be loving it. Just how we got here is a little disappointing for me.
All right, let's go back to the phones, take a break from ROH Final Battle, and go to Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. Reverend Keith, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Welcome, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for being on tonight. What's on your mind?
Okay, I kind of caught bits and pieces of what Tyler was saying. He said he wanted me to bring clarity to Shane Taylor. and something relative to the pay-per-view next Saturday. What was it, Tyler?
It was J.D. Griffey. He was with Shane Taylor Promotions at the end of the Sinclair version of Ring of Honor, right? I just can't remember him being a big role. I just don't remember him very much, so I thought you might have more knowledge than I did on that.
He was, and he also wrestles full-time for Wrestling Revolver. Matter of fact, I just saw him in a six-man scramble last night, and I like his combination of mixed martial arts, and he's a definite A1 striker. So he'll pose a problem with that match coming up next Saturday, but I think he'll mesh well against Swerve Strickland because we know Swerve has happy feet as well. So he'll be a good attribute for that match. Now, with that in mind, guys, I think that Swerve is going to turn on Keith. I thought it was interesting how Swerve just came up from behind and you know, had that sneaky grin on his face after Keith had walked out on him at the Full Gear show. So I guess they're going to drag out the turn, and it's obvious that Swerve is a heel, as you guys just mentioned. Being a good friend of Shane Taylor's, I was so happy to see him get that much-needed credibility, and it was long overdue, his debut on Dynamite. I was happy to see that, and I could see him going very far. How far do you think Shane Taylor's ceiling will be?
Yeah, it really depends on what his role in the new ROH will be. You know, is he going to be a guy who is brought in full-time? Is he a guy who's going to be utilized within the AEW ecosystem going forward? That's really the question. I think when Tony Khan gets ROH up and running, whenever that might be, you know, he's going to need a full complement of guys based on the way that Tony Khan has said he wants to run ROH, and I think Shane Taylor is a guy who can be a cornerstone of that new ROH. A lot of it's depending on timing, Tyler. You know, we've been talking about Tony Khan buying ROH now for almost a year, and there's still no TV deal. There's still no separate company separate from AEW. So for a lot of these guys like Shane Taylor who are sort of waiting and waiting and waiting, it really is that waiting game into how long is it going to take for ROH to get something to where Tony Khan can build an actual roster of wrestlers.
Yeah, I mean, that's key as well. I mean, I think, you know, if you're going to project someone like a Shane Taylor, you're going to assume that is happening where Ring of Honor is its own entity and its own TV product. But, you know, if that doesn't happen, I thought, you know, when Ring of Honor shuttered and there was, you know, five people you could pick from the Ring of Honor roster, if you're WWE or AEW, Shane Taylor was on my personal list. And I think if, let's say, Ring of Honor doesn't happen and doesn't have a weekly television product, I think Shane Taylor's ceiling in AEW would be a Eddie Kingston type. I think he can be the fan favorite, just like Eddie is, and he's kind of that, you know, blue-collar, working-class hero type mentality like Eddie and John Moxley are. I think they would all pair well together, and I think obviously a vast majority of people that watch AEW have not seen Shane Taylor work in the wrestling ring, and he's you know, physically impressive and surprises you every time you watch him. So I think that would be his ceiling. I think, like you laid out, Greg, I think Ring of Honor being a product that you see weekly and is booked and has people on a roster made for it, I think that is a more likely situation for Shane Taylor to flourish, but if not, I think he has a lot of potential. I just, you know, you never know Tony Khan. He picks his favorites and runs with them for a period of time and sometimes doesn't. So, you know, I wouldn't want to be a wrestler and have to be worried about that. Hopefully Ring of Honor is his own ecosystem and he can flourish in it like he was before the Sinclair version shut down.
All right, Reverend Keith, back to you for your second question for us tonight.
Before I bring up the second point, though, Tyler, I agree with you as far as the ceiling, but I truly think that Shane Taylor Promotions needs to be brought to Ring of Honor. Reverend Ron Hunt, Khan, Moses, and the big bad Kaiju himself, O'Shea Edwards, they were a very formidable faction in Ring of Honor, and they were on top when Ring of Honor folded. They held the six-man titles, and, you know, Shane Taylor had a very impressive matchup 1 year ago this time against Kenny King. And we all remember that. So, you know, I think this is just the beginning of stardom in the Ring of Honor / AEW Tony Khan version. You know, I think that if they can put the Shane Taylor Promotions faction back together, then you on to something. You know, they would have a much higher ceiling than having Shane by himself. So I just wanted to reiterate that. I don't know your thoughts on the entire family being brought back, Tyler.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you. I think that is, you know, best case scenario. That's Ring of Honor being having its own product and having a roster. That's what I would do as well. You know, we've seen Khan in the current group, what Embassy of, I forget their name, because they've been brought up so much. Him with Brian Cage and Leona.
The Prince Nana.
Embassy, yeah. Yeah, with Nana. You know, that's fine too, but yeah, Khan and Moses and Shane and the Kaiju and all that stuff. I mean, that worked so well, and that was one of the bright points of a dark period in Ring of Honor. And they were, you know, it was just, they made, you know, everyone that's ever listened to me knows I don't like trios titles, next to titles. And that team made those trios titles the most important belt in the company, in my opinion. And that is a hard thing to do. So yeah, that would be literally printing money, in my opinion, when you get that group to a bigger amount of people. I am a little more bearish on the Ring of Honor thing happening in the way that we all want it to happen. And I think Shane Taylor, if he were unfortunately by himself, I think he can navigate the waters. But I would prefer them all to be together and play off of all their own talents, because he's Shane Taylor is one of the best mouthpieces. That's also a alpha in a wrestling group, which I think is a hard thing to get in pro wrestling. And I think he fits that category.
Yes. Now moving upward, I want to discuss the women's match. And then my third point, Greg Parks, will be on the Ring of Honor title match between Jericho and Claudio. But now, Athena is doing very well in her role as a heel. I'm glad she made the heel turn. It looks like it's going to be a successful one. However, to keep this feud going, I think you need to extend it out a little bit, because Mercedes is just coming back. So I could see this dragging out a little bit. I don't think that they'll do a title change here. So I think maybe you know, maybe Mercedes goes over and then Athena beats her up from behind, or, you know, sneaks her from behind like she's been doing everybody else to keep it going. What are your thoughts on the women's title match?
Yeah, we haven't talked about that one yet. We can take a moment now, Tyler, and talk about that. Mm-hmm. Mercedes Martinez versus Athena, ROH Women's Championship. I agree with Reverend Keith. I think the Athena heel turn, it sort of was – I don't think it was really planned. I think it just sort of came out of, you know, the internet feedback on one of her matches on Dark or Dark Elevation, whatever it was. But I think it's worked. I think this aggressive version of Athena is a lot more interesting than whatever she was doing before. And it's gotten her a pay-per-view match out of it. So I think you can chalk it up to being a success. And I think that version of Athena matches up really well with Mercedes Martinez, who herself is a very hard hitter. I mean, she's a violent a wrestler. And so I'm really interested to see where this goes. I guess I wouldn't be as surprised as Reverend Keith if the title changes hands here. But I would agree that I'm not sure this is going to be one and done. You know, it really depends on, and we go back to ROH being within the ecosystem of AEW, how much do you want to do that if you're Tony Khan? Because you could have Mercedes Martinez and Athena continue that feud on AEW television, but how much time on AEW TV are you willing to give to ROH? How much airtime are you willing to give to them? And when you've already got, you know, Chris Jericho is your champion, so obviously he's going to be featured. Daniel Garcia or Wheeler Yuta, whoever comes out as peer champion, obviously is going to be featured. Same with Samoa Joe. He's an ROH champion. He's going to be featured on AEW TV. So do you want to add another champion that's going to be featured on AEW TV in order to tell that story between Athena and Mercedes Martinez? I don't know. That's a decision Tony Khan is going to have to make, Tyler.
Yeah, I'm probably more aligned with you, Greg. I mean, I like the booking idea that Reverend Keith is bringing up. I think that's the more sound way to tell the story. But I think the lack of eyeballs that are going to watch that better told story is on Tony Khan's mind. And I think the Athena character right now is not the hottest it can be, but I think losing here, she'll lose steam as this, you know, more aggressive heel character. And, you know, even if she gets her heat back after the match is over, I personally would just pull the trigger and make her the women's champion, just for the fact that people, you know, if she's on Dynamite as the ROH women's champion, that raises her profile more so than if she had a hard fought victory against Martinez in a loss and then get them back down the line. But, you know, if we had more consistent storytelling and I knew every Rampage or every other Rampage you could tell the story, I would be more for that. But I think Athena, he's got to pull the trigger while her character is relatively hot within the ROH landscape. But I think if they had a long, drawn-out feud, I think that would be the most ideal way to go.
And, Reverend Keith, you wanted to touch on the ROH championship match as well.
Yes. To add intrigue to the what is continuously being viewed as the Blackpool Combat Club, which I think soon will disband, I think Jericho will retain, and it'll bring a different story arc to the overall picture as far as the JAS versus the BCC, which has been dragged out. I mean, my God, it's been going on for, what, four and a half months. It just seems like it will never end. So to add more intrigue to this never-ending story, I can see Jericho winning by nefarious means. And this will allow Claudio to have to join the JAS, and let's see if he tries to destroy the JAS from within. Your thoughts?
Usually when you have a stipulation where if X loses, they have to join the other group, it's a pretty clear way that they're going to win. But with the write-off of William Regal on Dynamite this past week and the potential ending of the Blackpool Combat Club, it would make sense from a timing standpoint for Claudio Castagnoli to be forced to join the Jericho Appreciation Society at the conclusion of this match. So I would agree with that. I mean, Tyler, how do you think that plays in terms of – it's always very awkward storytelling because, I mean, how can you force someone to be a part of some other group? Like, that's kind of a lame stipulation. But the timing of Regal's – departure, as it seems, with this stipulation certainly seems to point toward Claudio having to join JAS, at least for an amount of time there.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the William Regal is canary in the coal mine, right, on this story happening. And I think, you know, in the grand scheme, I'm intrigued if Claudio is grudgingly walking around and has a purple bucket hat on and is hanging around with the JAS. Now, if you're a big Claudio fan, I think that downgrades him pretty significantly for at least a period of time where he's palling around and having a sour face while the JAS are doing their thing. But, you know, it leads to him getting revenge on Chris Jericho at some point. Presumably when Chris Jericho loses the Ring of Honor title, him and Claudio would have a, you know, weapon-heavy, stipulation-heavy match where Claudio then gets revenge and you hope to propel him to that next upper tier that he potentially can be. But, you know, I think this is kind of where Claudio is going to live within the ecosystem of AEW. So I also project Chris Jericho to win and to see some comedy with Claudio and the JAS, which I think is not the worst thing in the world.
Reverend Keith, good to hear from you this week. Always a pleasure. Look forward to your thoughts on these shows next weekend.
Yes, I'll be joining you by the grace of God next weekend, and we can discuss both Deadline and this Ring of Honor final battle. Have a good week. God bless you guys.
Thank you, Reverend Keith. I hope you have a good week as well. One more thing I wanted to talk about in terms of the Jericho-Castagnoli match, Tyler, before we move on to our final match of final battle to talk about is the purpose of putting the ROH title on Chris Jericho from a Tony Khan perspective always seemed to me to be I can take ROH to television executives and point to Chris Jericho as our champion, someone who they would likely recognize, either from wrestling or from many of the other things that he's done in entertainment. They still haven't gotten a TV deal for ROH, so it doesn't make sense that they would want to take the title off of him when it seems the purpose of putting the title on him has not been fulfilled yet. Do you think, am I reading that right? Is that kind of at least a part of the reason to put the title on Chris Jericho, the ROH title, is so either you're impressing television executives or if you do get a TV deal for ROH, you can kind of lead with Chris Jericho as champion as someone out there that the mainstream will have heard of and it's going to attract some fans right away to the product.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with that as well. I'm looking up when he – yeah, so also one thing to keep in mind here from a just like – interpersonal standpoint is Chris Jericho won that title at Grand Slam, the event at, in Flushing, New York, at Arthur Ashe Stadium, and that was after all the All Out brouhaha with CM Punk and the Bucks and Kenny and all that. And as was widely reported, you know, Jericho had a Fozzy tour that was starting just after that, and Jon Moxley was supposed to go on vacation, and they both stuck around to kind of solidify the company. So I think part of it, most of it is what you're talking about, where he's probably always going to win the title around that time to the TV companies. But he also seemed like a thank you for sticking around. Here's another world title for you from a Tony Khan perspective. So I think that is not to be discounted there as well. But, yeah, I mean, taking off Claudio and then putting it back on Claudio just from a booking standpoint doesn't make a ton of sense to book a world title in that way where you bounce back and forth. But, yeah. What you're saying is obviously 90% of the key here, and you wouldn't just want to be like, well, we tried for 2 months and we didn't get it, so we'll put it back on Claudio. It would just be a weak leadership decision by Tony Khan, in my opinion.
I guess the other question then is how long are you willing to go with Jericho as champion trying to get that TV deal with him? Is there a point where you say, hey, it's not working, like it's not having an effect in those meetings that we're having, let's just go with someone else? I mean, not that having Chris Jericho as ROH champion is an albatross in and of itself, and you're just kind of waiting to get the title off of him, but how long can you kind of use that as your excuse to keep the title on him as well? I mean, that's another thing you have to balance too.
Yeah. I mean, you know, without knowing the particulars there, I would say, you know, after this pay-per-view, is it an opportunity to take it off of him? The next Ring of Honor pay-per-view, which would be in, well, March is the next AEW, so probably for February would be the next opportunity to take the title off of him. And I think that's a perfectly fine time to do it. If you are trying to sell it and that hasn't worked, then there's no reason to keep it on him because obviously he's not going to be the selling point of your company. It's probably more a portfolio of wrestlers and, hey, I can guarantee you, you know, we're going to do at least Rampage numbers more than who the champion is for that streaming service or that cable network. So I think next pay-per-view after this, and it's really just who is up against, right? If this wasn't Claudio, this was, you know, Daniel Garcia, who had aligned with a Brian Danielson and they were going at it, I think Garcia defeating Jericho in the spot would make a lot more sense and be a lot more open than Claudio kind of getting his rematch months later.
The final match of Final Battle that has been announced so far, Daniel Garcia versus Wheeler Yuta for the ROH Pure Championship. I think there's been a lot of frustration from fans about how this Daniel Garcia storyline has played out. I think it really raised his stock with both the Jericho Appreciation Society and Brian Danielson, the Blackpool Combat Club, sort of trying to recruit him. And, you know, he did really well on promos during this time. And for him to go back to Jericho Appreciation Society felt kind of like a step backward. And now, of course, we're seeing that the Blackpool Combat Club could be disbanding. So maybe it was a blessing in disguise that he ended up going back and you know, nothing really changed. But is this kind of where you expected Daniel Garcia to be after all was played up and they were bidding for his services? Or would you have liked to have seen him chew on something a little bigger at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think of the promo. I think it opened one of a Dynamite episode. It was, you know, Jericho, Bryan Danielson and Daniel Garcia in the middle of the ring. And yeah, like you said, they were vying for Garcia's allegiance. It was Bryan Danielson saying, "Do you want to see me and Garcia tag team?" And the crowd doing the yes chant. And it just made Garcia feel like 10 talent in the company. And then, you know, you switch from that, and now he's in, you know, low card. I mean, not on this pay-per-view. He's probably second from the top. But relatively low card stakes since that point. And I think even if you knew that Regal was leaving at the end of the year and the Blackpool Combat Club was going to disband, I think there still was an opportunity to have Garcia and Danielson work together and have something happen and see if he had anything. And this feels like a downgrade on what was not promised, but it seemed like a pretty big opportunity for Daniel Garcia, and the crowd was into it, and to pull away from that has been disappointing for me personally. Now, I have probably not seen as much of Daniel Garcia as other people have. I think he's a tremendous worker, but I think, like many young people in the business, not just AEW, that there is something desired on the microphone and from a charisma standpoint that felt like that would have been a little bit of an aggressive push. But if you were to ask me what I would prefer, I would prefer to see him and Danielson tag together, see what you had there, and then you can tell a story 2 months after they've gotten together, and you know, you can tell a story similar to what you're telling now, and you know, them buying to be Blackpool Combat Club members by fighting each other is a more interesting story than Wheeler being like, "Oh yeah, also give me a title shot there," which is kind of how this match has been set up. So yeah, I think it's been just a lack of faith in Daniel Garcia, and that has not helped his character, obviously.
Yeah, this will be a good match, Garcia and Yuta, especially with the rules the way they are. I would expect this to be the pure rules match. I would expect this to be pretty good. So that is Final Battle, Deadline and Final Battle, both next Saturday. We'll be on the air Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, taking your reaction to this. Don't forget, if you're not going to be able to catch us live, email us your thoughts, wnialivecast@gmail.com. Always love getting emails discussing on air with my co-host. A lot of fun, not only interacting with people over the phone, but also getting those emails. So we will we had somebody on hold and they dropped off. We'll vamp here for a minute, Tyler, see if they hop back on. But Final Battle, I mean, what's your looking at this show overall? Strong entry from the AEW ROH contingent. Where does it fall in terms of, you know, we've seen a year's worth now, I think three or four shows of AEW running ROH pay-per-views. In terms of your interest in this, is it right amongst those others, higher, lower? Where does it fall for you?
Yeah, I mean, I would say certainly lower. Now, we don't have a full card. I'm looking back at the other ones. The most recent Death Before Dishonor, which is in July, had 11 matches. And then Supercard, which was an AEW product, right? Yes, the Supercard had 12 matches. So, you know, we have five booked right now. It seems crazy that we'd book seven more matches here for ROH, but doesn't have the same hype as some of those FTR and Briscoe's matches had. So, you know, one thing to look for here is FTR going to have a match? I think, you know, that is certainly saying something about them and their relationship with the company if they're not going to have a match on ROH card. So if that is the case, then what are we going to see? So, you know, it's an incomplete right now, but of the ROH matches that AEW's put on, this is certainly my least anticipated based on kind of how these matches have come together and then a lack of that, you know, must-see match. It feels more like a relatively stacked episode of Dynamite more so than a pay-per-view I have to run out and buy personally. So, but, you know, we'll see. I think they'll add at least three, four more matches, and that could change my opinion as well.
Sure. All right, Tyler, thank you so much for joining us here tonight on Wrestling Night in America to preview these big shows. I'll go ahead and let you tell fans where they can follow you on social media and where and when they can find your work for The Torch.
Yes, you can follow me on Twitter at Ring of Tyler. So connect with me there. I'm always happy to talk wrestling. For The Torch, you can catch my alternative live reports of AEW Dynamite every Wednesday as the show is happening. Also do the VIP exclusive podcast that recaps AEW Rampage. So if you don't watch the show, you can listen to me talk about it for about 20 minutes, get caught up, just like Wade does with Raw and Dynamite and SmackDown every week. And then also over on the YouTube page, youtube.com/PWTorch. Myself and Zach Hadorn do a ton of content daily during the week to recap shows, preview shows, and talk about all the biggest stuff in wrestling. We also do watch-alongs for the biggest shows in wrestling and get off the air promptly so people can call you, Greg. So just so you know, we're not impeding on your footprint there. So if you want to watch the shows, you can join Zach and I on YouTube, and then you can call Greg right after. So we've got you fully complete here on PW Torch.
Yeah, I told Zach, I said, I'd love to join you for one of those for at least for a few minutes, you know, just to plug the show after. So I'm looking forward next time.
Yeah.
Hopefully next time you guys do that, I'll be able to hop on for a few minutes and talk while the show's going on, and then, you know, be able to plug Wrestling Night in America afterward. Looking forward to it. So, Tyler, thank you for
perfect.
Joining me tonight. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me as always. Always good to talk wrestling. And I am, you didn't ask me this, but I'll give it to you. I'm more excited for the NXT show than the Ring of Honor show on Saturday. So that's
okay.
Where we are in the wrestling world.
It's upside down, topsy-turvy. Wow. Thank you, Tyler.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
Yep.
All right. And, of course, you can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. You can also find me here next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, talking NXT Deadline and ROH Final Battle. I hope you'll join me, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.